Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Kühne+Nagel podcast series, Shipping Insights. I'm your host, Sarah Vollmer, Vice President of Global Sea Logistics, Customer Engagement and Events at Kühne+Nagel. You and I are about to embark on an exciting journey through the world of sea freight. I've been fortunate enough to have a front row seat to this industry's ups and downs over the past two decades. Now it's my pleasure to bring to you the latest developments, innovations, and solutions in this dynamic industry. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just curious about logistics, get ready for enlightening conversations and expert insights in our latest episode. Let's dive into the fascinating world of sea freight together and welcome our latest guest. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to our latest podcast episode on Kühne+Nagel's Shipping Insights podcast series. I'm your host, Sarah Vollmer, and today we are recording from an amazing location. We are here in Newport, Rhode Island, as we are taking part in the Ocean Race events. My guest, he has been on with me before, so I'm so happy he's back again to be interviewed, hopefully not so painful, and it's Boris Herman. Boris, say hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. So, Ocean Race. Tell me about this.
Yeah, the Ocean Race is a race, a team sailing event. There are five sailors on each boat, and we sail around the world in seven stages. Europe, through the Atlantic, around Antarctica, and then stopping now in Newport before we head back to Europe.
Have you been to Newport before?
I have been here in 2014, I think. It was another big sailboat that we brought over here from Europe to be then we were here in standby for a few days or weeks and did the Newport Bermuda record.
Okay, yeah.
Not sure if we're still holding this record, to be honest.
You don't know?
No, some other people might have tried, but I didn't. I would have to check. There's a official list, the World Record Racing Council. Everyone can Google that. You go on the list, you find the records, and you can see who has which record.
Okay, so I'm going to Google that after this, because now I'm really curious if you still hold the record. So tell me, I know unfortunately you weren't able to make this latest leg coming from Brazil to Newport here, but would you give us a little bit about what it was like? What it was like for your team? Did you encounter any challenges along the way? Did other boats encounter any challenges along the way to come up here for this last leg?
I mean, the whole reason of being here is to challenge ourselves and to do this race. And it's full of challenges every moment. It is a competition. So we had a very close racing sports situation going on between our team, Team Malizia, and 11th Hour Racing. Holcim, another strong competitor and overall race leader, unfortunately dropped out early in the leg near Rio. They lost their rig. Technical failure and the rig fell out of the boat.
Oh.
They will be back here in a few days, ready for the import race and then for the start. After a huge logistical effort, Kühne+Nagel has been involved as well in that, transporting the boat from Rio to here on a dedicated cargo vessel that must have cost a lot, and bringing over the mast from Europe, the new mast, in a cargo plane.
Holy smokes!
That must also have been quite a technical logistical challenge, but
wow.
It's all on track. The mast has arrived, the boat is on its way, and they fit it all together in a few days.
Okay. All right. Now, I believe I read not too long ago in the Wall Street Journal about some seaweed that the team was encountering. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I saw this too. There were articles in some big media outlets in the Wall Street Journal and in some other quite big newspapers. And we always have seaweed in the Atlantic, but normally not quite as much. Or a little bit further north around Bermuda.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a seasonal thing and dependent on many factors, and science is not, you know, scientists never like very strong simplifying statements, but the statement we can assume, or the fact that we can assume, is that it's related to climate change. The oceans get warmer,
there's more seaweed, and it turns out into a big problem in many places where this stuff is swept onto the shore.
Right.
Miami beaches full of seaweed. Sometimes I'm not sure if that happened this year, but there have been years where you could basically not enjoy the beaches anymore, and it's a big hassle for tourism in many Caribbean islands, the French islands there, for example, Guadeloupe, Martinique, etc. They do big spendings to go with lots of cranes and trucks onto the beaches to clear them up after all this seaweed comes. And then for our race, it slows down the boat a bit,
right,
which is not the end of the world, but it frightens you if you see this up to the horizon, seaweed everywhere. You see it very well on satellite pictures. Those pictures actually were the pictures in the Wall Street Journal that you must
have seen. Right. So, but I mean, with that, right, of course, there's the environmental impact, right, or the assumption that it's become larger and larger because of climate change and the oceans warming. But then, you know, even just to even sail through, I mean, how do you even sail through that without completely damaging your boat?
No, the seaweed, the sargasso, it's an algae effect. That's very soft.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't damage the boat at all, but it gets, it's bulks up at the rudders, for example, and they felt the boat slowed down. It's not really a problem for us, but it's more like, we witness these changes over mm-hmm. the years. And in like 10, 15 years of sailing career, we get more and more confronted with that issue. And that's something we can actually observe out there.
Right, right. So let's get into that right now. Let's talk a little bit more about that. So tell us about a race we must win. So tell me about the purpose here of the team and what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, so we are a sail racing team, set out to do the big offshore races, the Vendée Globe and the Ocean Race. But we want to do more than just the sport. We want to use the platform and its media attention it gets to talk about subjects that we are most interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change being the main one, but then it's related to kind of our workplace or our playground, the ocean.
Right.
And that connection is something we emphasize a lot. We are involved in scientific activities around it, collecting data, CO2 ocean data.
Mm-hmm.
And we use these things for our educational program. Tying it all together, the adventure, being out there in the ocean, seeing these things, and being in contact with the scientists who help us understand what's going on. That makes the comprehensive educational story that we tell in schools and to kids in quite a few countries now.
Right, right. So I know you believe, I think it was actually, or it's actually today, you do have a child or a children's event set up. So how's that going? And I believe your wife is a teacher, no?
Yeah, my wife used to be a teacher for 10 years. And
okay.
Then she joined the team full time to manage and supervise this educational campaign. And the target group is kids 10 to 12 or 8 to 14. And then it changes quite a bit by countries or schools, mm-hmm. levels, cities, how mature kids actually are, or how curious they are in a specific thing. So that's why we can say 8 to 14, let's say. We created this educational book that we offer to schools, classes, and teachers. And they can, it's kind of an open program that they can include in their activities. And open it, we think, is important because the teachers have their agenda set usually for the year. And
sure.
There's not so
yeah.
much spare time to just do interesting projects that come around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something they can really just do in a very gentle way. They can add that to that program or use that in a kind of versatile way for topics, subjects they want to work on anyway.
Okay.
And we started that because we felt kids, felt them so connected and energized following this unique adventure of around the world sailing.
Mm-hmm.
And we started that when my wife was still at school herself, and the kids got really excited over the periods of these races. And that's how it was born. And now it's been picked up by our partners who also promote this around their teams and employees for their kids. And then with Kühne Nagel, for example, the team in Brazil, or some Kühne Nagel people in Brazil said, oh, we like this educational campaign. We're going to translate this into Portuguese for free for the team, or like a volunteering activity they did.
Right.
They did that. And so the same thing happened in Japan, I think. And in some cases, we engaged translators and trying to use it in many different places. And we have this now in 12 languages. And so everyone can go to the website, myoceanchallenge.org, and then you find the education kit in different languages. Also the contact, so schools, if you are like parent of kids or something, yeah, don't hesitate to direct them there and take contact with the team to bring that in there in your class, in your school class.
Great. So once again, that was myoceanchallenge.org. Be sure to check it out. So where do you go after Hair Wars? Because I mean, this is so exciting, and this really is around the world type thing. So what's next? What's your next stop?
This Sunday, 21st of May, we start from here to Aarhus in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a transatlantic race on the shortest possible route. We pass the UK islands. We leave them to the right, to starboard. We pass them to the north and then come into the Strait of Denmark, Skagen, into the Baltic Sea and down to Aarhus.
So how are you preparing for this? What do you need to do this week here? Because we have a few days before the race actually starts. How do you prep?
The team is preparing the boat, meaning they take the feedback from the last leg, plus their own inspection results, and tweak and repair or maintain certain systems on the boat. Then other parts of the team, they prepare our food, our equipment, etc. So that's like the basic preparation. And then we do weather studies for 3-4 days before the start, with briefings where all the sailors and part of the team join in, with two meteorologists, one of them being Wouter Verbrack, who's actually an employee of Kühne Nagel. During the race, we are not allowed for any outside assistance. So we try to take as much input as possible before the start from people like him.
Okay.
And then we calculate the best routes, the best possible routes, which we need to continue that job on our own. That's probably the biggest part of our preparation, actually. And then the week is quite busy with meeting our partners, their guests, children like we did today, random people and fans, being out there for quite nice interventions that are like, you know. And then we have 2 days of pro-am racing and the import race on Saturday. The import race actually counts for the overall race.
Oh, it does. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
The 2 days of pro-am racing, they are more like for us like a warm-up, but also to give the chance to some people experience this and come on these speed runs.
Very, very cool. So when does the ocean race end again? And then what happens after that? Do you get to take a vacation? Do you ever stop? What happens?
The ocean race ends 1st of July. In Genoa, we have the last import race, and it might be decisive for the overall result. We hope that we are clear with points by then, because the 7 stages plus all the import races, we accumulate points. The boat with the most points wins. And if you have equal points, then the import race decides at the end. So we will see how that goes for us. We are hoping to be in one of the top positions. Then after that, we sail to Monaco. And early July, we do a little team gathering there. Monaco has been our founding partner, the team's founding partner, and is still a partner of the team. A very important partner, also giving us the name Malizia, which is connected with the founding myth of Monaco. And after that, the shore team will deliver the boat back to Lorient, our shore base, team base in France, Brittany. That takes about 10 days of sailing. And the sailors will all be off from the sailing. Not completely off, because we have media engagement. We again see partners or do kind of try to develop the communication story that is basically ongoing from race to race. The next race then is waiting for us in September, a shorter race in Brittany, and then in October, end of October, a big transatlantic double-handed race. Three more single-handed races possibly to do in the winter or early next year to New York, and then the Vendée Globe 24, 25 in the winter for me to sail alone around, non-stop around. But of course, I do also some breaks in between.
Right, right. Okay, well, it's going to be great, I think, with Vendée Globe and have Sea Explorer out there. Unfortunately, during the last Vendée Globe is when the pandemic hit. So while you still did it, we weren't able to really engage. So we're looking forward to being able to have that and host some more in-person events at that time.
Well, actually, the pandemic helped us massively. I mean, it is an ironical fact that the Vendée Globe shot through the roof and broke every record of like engagement and people's interests, because many other sports couldn't happen. And soccer stadiums were closed, people were at home, couldn't travel, and we kind of could provide a little bit the desire of kind of, you know, remote traveling or traveling and voyages and you know, these things. So the dream of the adventure, and provide that to the sofas and desks and home offices of this world. And this really was a very specific phenomenon that happened during the pandemic.
Okay. So my last question. On the transatlantic race, are you going to bring Greta Thunberg over on Sea Explorer again?
No, I don't think so.
No? Darn.
She would need to do lots of medical training and specific survival trainings, and I don't think she has time for all that. But of course, we would always invite her back on the boat. If she needed to go somewhere, we would see if we could help out. I think it was, you know, it was a singular story in 2019, bringing her over. And it did fulfill its purpose in my eyes, drawing attention to the issue of climate change. And she has certainly moved on doing her studies now, I believe, and other things. And ourselves also, we are doing other things. But we are still in contact and exchange every once in a while. And she was wishing us good luck for this race. And I believe she's following a little bit.
Oh, that's great. Well, nothing but the best of luck to you and the team and to Sea Explorer. And we can't wait to see how the next legs turn out. So all the best. Good luck. We know you can do it. And for more information, please check out our website as well. We actually have our original podcast with Boris posted. And you can follow us and definitely check out some other things we have to say. Boris, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for spending a little bit of time with me today to have a chat. We really appreciate it. We know you're busy.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. And yes, please check out the website, the dedicated, you still need just to say the URL of the website.
What, myoceanchallenge.org?
But there's also a dedicated Kühne-Nagel website
of
the team.
Of course, there is. We have the landing page on our home website as well for Team Malizia and Sea Explorer, where you can also find a lot of great information there about the team. And of course, their very important mission and purpose here.
As we're doing a podcast, I really like this format. We also started a podcast that we do on board.
Oh, you do? Yeah.
So it's called End of Watch. And yes, you can find it via our website. And speaking about
podcasts, and on your YouTube channel, right?
Yes. And speaking about podcasts, there's also a New York-based podcast called Wind Support.
Wind Support, okay.
Wind Support, you find that on Google. And they are speaking about everything that has to do with cargo shipping and wind support. So hybrid propulsion and wind-assisted propulsion. That's one of my key topics. One of my favorite topics, and the last episode is speaking with me about our engagement in this sector of wind cargo shipping.
Oh, very cool. Okay, guys, there's lots of information to check out there on your way to work or wherever. So please be sure to follow us, and it's a pleasure. And thank you, Boris. Till next time.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome.